May I speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. There's always a temptation as preacher to steer clear of difficult passages. But maybe I'm a glutton for punishment. The fourth Sunday after Pentecost presents us with a challenging Old Testament and a challenging Gospel. In Matthew 10, we have been subjected to what one might call Matthew's scattergun accusatory approach. If one accusation is good, then many are even better. And amongst his accusations that we heard this morning, he seems to be suggesting something about conflict between family members, and by extension, a conflict within the wider society. He seems to be suggesting that this is to be expected. The passage concludes with the dire warning, I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. And to paraphrase him, I've come to pit family members against one another, and one's foes will be one's kith and kin. The title that I gave to this sermon on the website was Family Trouble. And it's an apt title indeed. And once we get over the shock of his words, we might begin to notice that the picture he paints of familial and societal conflict is actually one that's most familiar to us. What's shocking about it is, for some reason, we don't expect Jesus to talk this way. After all, isn't Jesus the prophet of turn the other cheek, not the prophet of strike back? And isn't Jesus' message all about love and acceptance? But the reality that we live in is a conflict-riven society set in an increasingly conflict-riven world. And riffing a little bit on my own responses to this passage, it's as if we cry out for peace, and yet Jesus rebuffs us. Don't cry to me for peace when you have no real appetite for what it takes to establish it. The reign of God's kingdom ushers in the promise of peace, but it's not any kind of peace. It's not peace at any price. It's peace predicated upon the establishment of justice. And to the extent to which there is no justice in the world, then there will be no peace. For the reign of God's kingdom is at odds with the ways of the world. And so Jesus does not so much bring the sword as many of his crusader-minded followers might like to believe. The sword of violence is already in play when God's reign breaks into a world not yet committed to peace with justice. Now, love is the abiding principle by which Christians should live, and we prattle on about love. What a complex word love is, we say to each other. How can we even begin to know what it should look like? But it's actually very simple. Because justice is what love looks like in action. Justice is Christian love's expression of solidarity with the stranger, the vulnerable, and the outcast. It's one thing to acknowledge that we may not be up to the demands of love, but it's quite another to say that we don't know what love is. And in the Gospel from Matthew this morning, we find this difficult text preceded by another difficult text in Genesis 21, which relates the curious incident of the conflict in Abraham's family. So the theme of family trouble continued. This is a story about a wife and a concubine. It's the story about the heir and his bastard brother. It's the story about power and the victims of power, about the jealousy of a wife for vengeance on the one who threatens her son and his future, and the failure of a husband to intervene in order to protect both his sons, bastard son as well as heir. Talk about family drama. And so the shock value of this story is a reminder to us that we cannot impose 21st century veneer of monogamous family life upon Abraham's domestic arrangements. And this is a warning to popular American Christianity that likes to take early biblical figures as modern role models. It requires a lot of airbrushing out to maintain that fiction. In thinking about today's sermon, I thought I would look back and see what pearls of wisdom I've spoken of in the past, only to find that actually I haven't really spoken many pearls of wisdom about this particular reading. But I did discover that in 2017, Linda preached on this very text under the title, Families Are Complicated. And in it, she drew the following conclusion from the story of Abraham's domestic drama. She said, God continues to work within the framework of the gift of free will and the resulting complications and chaos that accompany it. In doing that, we gain a window on our own lives and the lives of our neighbors. Hagar's suffering is redeemed through us. It calls us to see and to hear her lament in the abused, rejected, and marginalized in our own time. And it further calls us to offer them God's healing wherever we can, like a well of cool water. By God's grace and with God's help, that's not really complicated at all. Like most preachers, Linda's final sentence is an attempt to express her desire for a hopeful conclusion to an otherwise disturbing story. Yet I also hear a note of irony in her final sentence. The irony of not really complicated at all is the hint that it is very, very complicated indeed. Well, without God's help, that is. But we human beings are often not much interested in God's help when it comes to sorting out interpersonal and wider societal conflicts. A note of irony lies in our continued deafness to the point of this ancient story, because endlessly, our lives will be endlessly complicated if we see and hear God's lament in the abused, the rejected, and the marginalized in our own time. Now, although the actors in this Genesis story are far from modern persons with modern sensibilities, again, a warning about viewing them through our 21st century Western cultural lens, they nevertheless represent human archetypal responses. We see in Sarah our human desire to protect what is ours both now and in the future by sacrificing others whose existence threatens our control. In Abraham, we see, despite the helpless hand-wringing and the sincere heartache, a response of, I can't really get involved in this. This roused nothing to do with me. We see in Hagar and Ishmael the responses of the powerless who have no protection but that afforded by the love of God. And it seems only in this story that it is God who is listening and loving. Catherine Schifferdecker, the professor of Old Testament at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota, in a 2014 commentary on this text, notes, God opens Hagar's eyes to see a well of water nearby, just as Abraham in the next chapter will see a ram caught in a thicket. And in both cases, the seeing leads to new life for both Abraham's sons. It's easy to overlook this story of Ishmael, set as it is between the story of Isaac's miraculous birth and the story of his near sacrifice. Yet it is worth pausing and considering what Ishmael's story tells us about God's care and providence. As the old hymn reminds us, there's a wideness in God's mercy like the wideness of the sea. We cannot limit God's mercy. God hears the cry of the abandoned. God hears the cry of the outcast. And God judges those who are deaf to that cry. And so we cry, peace, peace. But there can be no peace until there is justice. The sons of Abraham are still at each other's throats in multiple permutations of this family conflict, echoing across the centuries into our own time. Remembering that it is Ishmael who becomes the father of the Arab people. Whether it's Jew or Arab, Israeli or Palestinian, Christian or Jew, Christian, Jew or Muslim, however you define the permutations, this is the timeless family struggle between the Sarahs and the Hagars, between the Isaacs and the Ishmaels, and later between the Jacobs and the Esaus. On and on and round it goes to our undying shame. Cleophas LaRue, who is the Princeton Seminary of seminary professor of homiletics, sums it up like this. He says, some think the divisions are little more than a family squabble, while others see in them a struggle against the cosmic powers of this present darkness. The Christ whom God has sent among us does not come to usher in an era of peace, but rather an era of engagement and challenge where convictions will be tested and decisions made about the things that matter in this life, even as creation along with humanity groans for redemption. The struggle is not an easy burden to bear. Jesus' sword means that simply following Jesus will bring its own rejections and conflicts as we work to right wrongs, fight complacency, ours and others, Speak truth to power. Turn away from judgment and embrace service. And be genuinely open to the transformative power of the encounter with Christ in our worship and our work. All these things are possible with God's grace. But note, no hint of irony in this last sentence. Amen.